Locals on Twitter and Facebook. Chances are you know people who may not know KPFT, and you'll introduce them to the fantastic music, interviews, news, and more that you hear daily on this radio station. Remember, just visit twitter.com/KPFT or facebook.com/KPFT Houston to promote and support KPFT online. This is Pacifica Radio, 90.1 KPFT Houston.
You're listening to 90.1 FM, KPFT Houston.
Listeners should be aware that the following program contains language and audio images which may be found disturbing and may not be suitable for your snotty-nosed little brat who probably cusses like a sailor behind your back anyway. Parental discretion is advised.
And welcome to the latest fresh off the airwaves edition of
Fresh on the Airwaves.
Welcome to
you say fresh off the presses, so.
Yeah, because this is going through a big old printing press.
Ears.
Huh? For your ears. Newsprint for your brain. Or something. Well, it's certainly.
Something.
Do we have them? Is it time? Welcome to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee. Yeah.
Oh.
Oh. There he
is. Hughes. I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
And he's
through house.
Somebody had flipped the orange button and I didn't notice it.
Damn them to hell!
The orange button. It'll get you every time.
Well, thank God the fundraiser's over. Man, that was brutal.
That was, yeah, pretty painful.
That was, yeah.
Ouch.
Glad it's over.
Let's not even talk about it.
All right.
Right.
On the regular business.
All right. Well, welcome to the show. We're glad you could tune in. Everything's back to normal, I hope. So you can check us out on geekradio.com. We're also hanging out IRC, irc.cuckoo.com in the channel Tech Bites. So you can come. That's the show within a show.
That was awesome.
That was cool. You like how I did that?
I don't think you did that. I did that. That was was that your Facebook alerting? Might have been mine. Anyway, so yeah, go to IRC. Go to IRC.cuckoo.com in the channel Tech Bytes, and you can hang out to the show within a show. You can also use the form on geekradio.com to contact us. If you would like to send a message, if you don't want to call in, that'd be fine. You can send an email, and we'll answer that during the week.
Cool.
So I'm waiting for everyone to show up tonight on the phone lines that were absent during the fundraiser. But for those of you that did call in or go on the web to make a pledge,
or came down and
paid in perfin, we are so glad for that. Let me
thank
see.
You.
We do have some people to thank that pledged on the webs. We want to thank Joseph from Tomball, who called in a pledge or webbed in a pledge, and Brian from Somerset, New Jersey, who pledged.
Awesome. Thank you.
And Susan from Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Wow.
Who pledged in memory of Uncle Luther. Brian says Technology Bytes is great. So Joseph was actually on the phone via the answering service, so he must have called in and got shuckled over to the answering service. So way to stay on the course and make that pledge.
Yes.
So, we're not going to talk about that too much, but I did want to take an opportunity to thank those that called in and made their pledges of support and helped us out during the fund drive, because that's really important and means so much to us.
The one unusual thing to me about it is that if you think about it, each pledge, each day, each, you know, episode of the pledge drive, we actually brought in more money as it went forward, which is completely counterintuitive.
Yeah.
You know, you'd expect to have a good first night and then a mediocre second, and then the third one might be really tough, and instead we, like, had the really tough one first, and then the last one was fairly successful as such things went.
Yeah, it was, it's kind of like the whole 3 week period kind of encapsulated like what usually is like a regular show where you have nothing in the first hour and a half, and then you kind of have a medium push in the second to last 15 minutes, and then the final 15 minutes, boom! So, instead of doing that over the course of three shows, you know, doing that each time three shows, we did it, you know, three shows. So we didn't really have quite the boom, but it was kind of reminiscent of that. But at any rate, we're glad you called in. We're glad you pledged, and now we know that we know where we stand.
Some of you like us.
Grr.
in a slight divot.
Slight divot.
Hmm.
All right. So that's all the information I have about the website. Let's see. It's wow. I can't believe May is almost over.
It was all fundraiser.
Well, yeah, I know.
That's why fundraiser stole my month.
It did steal my month. We're coming up on...
Also, the Memorial Day is really early. I think this is the earliest it can be in May without being Memorial Day anymore.
This weekend, or when is Memorial Day?
Yeah, this weekend is Memorial Day weekend. So it's 3-day weekend.
It's on Friday or Saturday, but I guess people are getting Monday off.
That's always on Monday. What are you
talking
about?
You always get
Monday off? Yes. It's always Labor Day and Memorial Day are
always on Sundays?
No, they're always on a Monday.
The holiday.
The holiday is always a Monday.
But I thought somebody said that Memorial Day is on Friday.
It's the first Friday.
Oh, there it goes.
Or the second.
No. It's Monday. It's always Monday.
The holiday.
The holiday. That's when the parades are. That's when everything happens. When the sales are on.
What about the actual real day?
It's Monday. It's the whatever.
Maybe in IT, they're like, hey, you've got Memorial Day, Friday off. See you Monday. That's how they staff the server rooms.
But there are people that show up to work on that Monday forgetting that the holiday is happening because they don't, you know, live by the clock.
They probably get some real work done. Because there's not all those other people there to distract
them.
That's
true. And it makes up for the time that they were late during daylight savings time or the first day after that. Now, daylight savings time always happens on a Sunday.
Or after the first Friday.
It's always the Sunday so that you lose
it's like
that.
It's the second Sunday of something.
Lose or gain your sleep before you go to work on Monday. That's why people are always either really late or really early to
really grumpy.
Shift. Yeah. So, wow. So that means a week from Friday is the Geek Gather, which is always the first No, actually, that's so confusing. 2 weeks from Friday, which is always the first Friday of the month. Well, that's actually 2 weeks, so we got time. All right, I'm looking at this calendar.
Pulling up a calendar app, yeah.
Yeah, I pulled up a calendar.
But it's not always right before the first Saturday.
Only if the groundhog sees a shadow.
That is correct. You know, so it says Google Calendars.
Take it as you will. This is what you pledged for,
you know,
or didn't pledge for.
I was completely. I don't know if you saw my tweet or which feeds into Facebook earlier today, but I was completely.
You were blindsided. You were blindsided. The internet betrayed you.
Yeah, I'm kind of pissed at the internet because it really let me down on this one. I'm supposed to know about things because of the internet, and specifically this sort
of
stuff.
We've always counted
like,
on you
know
knowing certain
it.
Things. So what did you miss? What did the internet? I mean.
What happened was my brother forwarded me a link on Facebook to a Wired article, which was about a movie, an indie like low budget movie that's coming out. That's I guess already been filmed. The trailer already exists. Actually, they're releasing it at Comic Con or something in August or something. But it's wide release.
Movie?
No. So what happened was this guy who's like a middle aged guy who works in middle management, makes decent money, won the lottery. He lives in Oregon or somewhere. When he says he won the lottery, it means he won $1,000 in the lottery, which really isn't.
This is the movie.
No.
This is the guy who created the content the movie's made from.
So he won $1,000, and he's like, you know, it's not nothing, but it's compared to what I make in a year, it's not going to change my life.
Right.
So
it's not a life-changing amount
of
money.
So he thought, what can I just do with this to do something interesting this $1,000 could be well spent? So I guess when he was in college, he had wanted to make a movie of this comic book sort of thing. And so he decided to try to do that, and he realized, you know, $1,000 isn't actually going to get me very far. So he started a Kickstarter, I guess, this is what I missed out on. I didn't even know this was happening. So it's already gone, and it's already done. It got like double funded or something, more than they wanted. It's coming out, and... So it's actually a movie, and it is it's not a parody, it's not a satire, it's a straight telling of Jack T. Chick's Chick Track about Dungeons and Dragons. And it's, the trailer looks awesome. I mean, because the thing is, you know, they're kind of like, how can you parody something like that? You can, it's going to just look stupid and bad. Like, all you can do is tell it straight in exactly the way they portray themselves. And it's called Dark Dungeons, and it looks really awesome. And so I was really annoyed that I wasn't able to get in on that and help fund it.
If only you had been patrolling the internet diligently looking for any mention of this beloved
Bale.
The only Failure. Thing is maybe somebody will decide that they want to make a movie out of the chick track called Green Angels, which is about the Christian rock band, because there's no such thing as Christian rock, and the agent who helps them is his name's Lou, his last name's Siffer, you know, they end up like in drugs and all kinds of stuff, and one of them commits suicide, and then finally, you know, the lead singer realizes that, you know, this was Satan leading them, and there is no such thing as Christian rock, and he performs and ends up, you know, he gets a haircut because you have to have clean cut short hair in order to be a good Christian. And now if they made that, maybe, you know, if I can know early enough somebody's making that into a movie, I can get in on the bandwagon.
So the Chick Tracks are what, those like little religious pamphlets?
Yeah. He does, Jack T. Chick has been doing this forever. And they're little pamphlets, tracks, religious tracks. And they're, you know, about 20, 22 pages or something like that.
The kind that you get given to you at a rock concert or,
yeah, or
like, on the beach at spring break.
Or people like surreptitiously leave them on top of payphones.
Surreptitiously.
I don't know
or
what
in
they're
grocery stores.
I don't know what they're doing now because there's not really payphones, so they have to leave
them. They're leaving them in restrooms and in grocery stores.
Okay.
Really? They still exist?
They did them at A&M when I was going there.
And you can buy them in bulk.
I know that they happened a long time ago.
And there's, I mean, the thing is, I'm sure millions of these have been printed. I mean, and he's got tons of them about all different kinds of stuff, and so they're pretty interesting. And
so is it the one about Dungeons and Dragons, like only 20 pages? How's that going to be a movie?
They kind of have flesh it out some.
Kinda.
Yeah.
A little. Some.
And then also the thing is, They also based it not only just that, but other tracks that he's written, so kind to get of, the worldview from other tracks that he's written, and from his website where he has certain things. The funny thing is, Jack T. Chick is like really a recluse. Like he doesn't ever do interviews. There's only like 6 pictures of him on the internet that exist.
Wow.
He almost never replies to mail or anything, and so this guy just decided to write him and ask for permission to have video rights to it, and he surprisingly got back a letter from Jack or the organization that said, yeah, cool, you can have the rights, you just need to make sure that, you know, you put on there that it's adapted from, you know, this Chick track copyright, whatever. And they didn't ask for any commission or payments or anything.
Huh.
Just spread
the
word.
It's really weird.
Just spread the word.
But, I mean, it is interesting because, yeah, he's doing a very straight telling of it. I mean, it's whatever the characters believe and whatever, that's how it's told in the movie.
I played D&D when I was a kid, and my dungeon master never looked like that, I would like to say.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I would have played a lot more D&D.
So this will be the
you just count your blessings that your dungeon master didn't dress like that.
Yeah. I didn't say that.
This will be the second movie made to show you the horrible perils of Dungeons and Dragons, because there was a crappy 80s movie that starred Tom Hanks.
Yeah, Mazes and Monsters.
Yeah, went insane because of it. He was living in Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah, it's funny. The only thing I remember that, because I did watch that movie, because my parents were a little concerned because I played Dungeons and Dragons some, and you know, and so I watched the movie because I wanted to see, like, maybe what should I be concerned? Like, what is this about? And I watched it, like, yeah, this is kind of stupid. But but in the only thing I really remember about the movie at all is at the very end, I remember they go to visit him. He's living with his parents, and he still thinks he's the character that he was playing in Mazes and Monsters, because they couldn't use the name Dungeons and Dragons. So he still thought he was a character, and he would go out in the back, because they lived near a bunch of woodlands area, and he would, like, go out into the woods, and this friend or two friends or whatever it was that would go visit him would go out there and act like they were their characters and well and have adventures, because he was mentally fried from...
Because they were LARPing.
It was really, yeah, early LARPing, really.
So they started a whole new thing. Rather than the old one.
All right, so I'm sorry that the internet betrayed you like that.
Hopefully, if it'll make you feel any better, if you want to come to my place around midnight with $1,000, we can make a movie. Give it some thought.
Do you have to wear that Dungeon Master outfit?
Consider this your bachelor party.
Yeah.
Just practice your line. Practice your line. Bring out the gimp.
Captain Crunch will be there.
Oh, man, thanks. Well, that's true, Barrett.
Shirts are optional. You might want to stretch, though. All right, so I'm glad you were able to let that out and get
share that with us.
Get your.
We should charge him for therapy. That's like at least a Bitcoin or two.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah. Well, we've the guy that was imprisoned. I guess was it the FBI that put him in there? He actually invoiced the federal government 1 Bitcoin. Was it per hour or per day? For the entire time he was under incarceration, because he says that he refuses to take currency that is aligned with evil entities, which is calling on the federal government. So I don't think they're going to pay. It was like an obscene amount of – it didn't sound like a lot of bitcoins. It was like maybe 1,337 or something like that, but it came out to like millions of dollars. It was a substantial amount.
It worked out to be 1,337?
Yeah. It worked out to be like maybe it was like 13.7 million, but the number of bitcoins was lower, so you know. But yeah,
so he got totally paid, right?
He hasn't gotten paid yet. he might get paid back, but I don't think he's gonna get paid.
But he's the one that started the new hedge fund, right?
Was
that him?
I haven't had that much time to read. I don't know.
Okay.
See, this is why you missed the movie trailer. You've been paying too much attention to Bitcoin. Cryptocurrency is distracting you from the true meaning of life.
Here's one from the internet for you, Afflicted. Tomorrow is Bitcoin Bitcoin Pizza Day.
Is this the anniversary of the day the guy bought the pizza for like 15 bitcoins or whatever?
10,000 bitcoins. If the person,
10,000 bitcoins.
If the person who sent, basically the guy said he'd give 10,000 bitcoins to anybody, to the first person who sent him a pizza. Somebody paid $25 for Papa John's to deliver him a pizza, and he gave him 10,000 bitcoins. If they held on to them.
This was like when bitcoins were worth like, you know, 10 cents a piece maybe.
Yeah. If the person held on to them, those are worth $5 million today.
We should have, could have.
Apple stock, real estate in the Heights. So many missed opportunities. God, I hate the 80s.
Enron shares.
All right. Well, we had a little therapy there for Afflicted and then got depressed about Bitcoin. So.
He feels better, but now I don't feel so well.
No, but I was going to say, so this interest is, I think it's it was a guy that he's starting a hedge fund, and his hedge fund is actually going to bring in companies and I think do shorts. What's that called? Shorts.
Shorting.
On
yeah.
He's going to short them because they have known security vulnerabilities that his group knows about.
Oh, okay. So, but that's inside. That's got to be. I guess that's not SEC controlled, though, huh?
It's not inside trading. Oh. And then they release.
Yeah, I guess so.
They release the vulnerability, and they have shorts on it, so their stock drops.
And they catch it.
And yeah, and like he was on like CNN and a couple. I don't remember who it was. He was on CNN and a couple of other interviews, and they were like, "Isn't that slimy? I mean, don't you feel like that's like wrong? Like you're doing something like inappropriate?" And yeah, and he had good answers.
Yeah, that's him. Yeah. He's going to fund a hedge fund.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's Andrew Weave, Ehrenheimer.
Okay, that's what I thought it was.
He said once he gets a lot of money together, he's going to become a patent troll.
And just so people know, we talked about this. It's probably been a year or two, but this was the guy when iPad users had all their email addresses lost through AT&T. This is the guy that leaked them and started it and say, hey, here's the big security issue. And then AT&T is the one that just pursued him and got him kind of landed in the pokey for – I think it was like 30 months or 36 months. Good chunk of time.
So he had time to think up this hedge fund.
He had time to write a letter.
Hey, all right. Now back to regularly scheduled programming bits. We're going to go out to San Antonio and do the Technology Bites Info Shot. So take it away, Info Shot.
It's the Technology Bites Info Shot. Technology news and commentary by Peter Hughes. Injected directly into your skull.
Okay, well, we start out depressing, but then we get to new stuff, and it's not so, you know, since if you're already, you know, needing therapy from not investing in Bitcoin or, you know, hedge funds that take advantage of zero-day vulnerabilities. Anyways, eBay has been cyber-attacked, or they were a while back. And if you're one of the 145 million users who have an account, you may well be affected. So this is the, you know, it's always the same advice, but take it. Update your passwords immediately on your eBay account. The breach was confirmed by investigators this week. It happened in late February and early March. eBay discovered it in early May. Way to shut the barn door after the hackers are gone. It seems hackers snatched up usernames, email addresses, physical addresses, phone numbers, and dates of birth. Gee, because they don't need it. You know, those kinds of things wouldn't help them get ways to compromise your identity. They were also able to access passwords, but the passwords were in encrypted form, so it's unlikely they were compromised unless they were lame on their encryption as they were on their security. eBay said no financial information was taken and that the cyber attackers found their way in through employee login information. So while your credit card info might be safe, experts believe the ramifications of the security breach could be vast. Part of the problem is, of course, people who reuse passwords across multiple sites. So they've got your email address, they've got your password. So it's hard to predict how serious it could be. But, you know, if you have a password on eBay and you're using it on other sites, probably change it every place that you're using that same password. It's just a good bit of advice. And there's also a crisis on a spacecraft bound for Pluto. This one's not so bad. It's most of the way to Pluto. It's NASA's New Horizons spacecraft. And the thing that the crisis is, it's in danger of not completing half of its mission. Project managers face a looming deadline to identify an icy object in the outer solar system for it to fly by after it goes past Pluto. The deal is, you know, one of the key parts of the whole project, $700 million project, was to visit a Kuiper Belt object, or KBO, and it left. They sent this probe in 2006, so you'd think they could have found one between then and now. But there's only a slim chance that astronomers will find a suitable KBO with their current strategy of using ground-based telescopes. And the problem is it's hard to get time on the Hubble, which would probably have a much easier time finding something that that was big enough for them to go, you know, send the probe to. New Horizons will fly past Pluto in July 2015. Soon afterwards, it has to fire its engines and set itself on course to fly past a selected KBO. So they have to identify the KBO in the next several months so that they can do the trajectory and get New Horizons to aim accurately and meet its target. So they're running out of time, said Mark Sykes, director of the Planetary Science Institute in Tucson, who's not involved in the mission. Quote, we're not just talking about science being lost. We're talking about getting return on our investment. So they're trying to get time on the Hubble. We'll see what happens. In theory, they should have identified a suitable KBO long ago, but they postponed the main search until 2011, waiting for all the possible KBO targets to begin converging on a narrow cone of space that New Horizons should be able to reach after its Pluto encounter. Starting to look for them before 2011 would have been impossible, apparently, because they would have been spread over too much of the sky. So then they started up, but so far they've found 50, and none is close enough to reach. So we'll keep an eye on this Pluto-bound crisis spacecraft. You know, I don't know. I mean, they've been looking for that plane for 30 days, but imagine if CNN got their hands on this Pluto project, because there'd be years of coverage. Have they found a KBO? In other news, you know, we're all safe. You might feel like you're safe working, you know, at the grocery store stocking the shelves because you couldn't possibly be replaced by a robot. This just in, the UBR-1 is a 4-foot-tall, one-armed robot that can work alongside humans in workspaces like warehouses and store shelves, you know, stocking store shelves. The UBR-1 isn't designed for small component assembly, but it can manipulate objects as small as dice.
Oops. What happened? What the heck is that? Did he just fell out?
All right. Possibly. We're back, though.
Well, we lost Pete.
Have you got me now?
We got you now. Were you done?
I'm trying to figure out what I'm... Are you hearing somebody talking?
No, we hear you talking now.
Okay, I guess there must have been a – you know, there are some ads that if they sit long enough, then they, like, play by themselves. And one of my stories must have sat long enough that it played an ad, so I started hearing that. In other news, so there's that robot. I turned that – you know, Dell is going to make – is going greener – Not totally green, but they're making a line of PCs using plastics obtained by expanding their recycling program. The company has expanded its hardware take-back program to more places worldwide, aiming to collect and reuse more extracted plastics and metals in PCs, monitors, hardware panels, and other products. So that's actually kind of cool that they're keeping track of it. Plus, they know what's in it if they're recycling stuff they produced. Dell's Optiplex 3030 All-in-One, which will ship next month, will be the first product from that effort. Starting next year, more laptops, desktops, and monitor back panels will be made using recycled plastic, said Scott O'Donnell, Director of Environmental Affairs at Dell. They're going to save some money by reusing plastic, but O'Connell did not say whether the savings will be passed on to customers through lower prices. It will, though, be easier for more people to recycle electronics, and Dell will also provide a PC mailback option. So I'd say kudos to them on that one. So, you know, making plastics last longer or be usable longer, and hopefully the saving money thing would be nice too, but you got to start somewhere. In other news, Google This one's kind of an interesting one. Google, you know, can't really sell business a broadband connection outside of the handful of fiber cities that are already set up, but it could supply the final wireless link to millions of restaurants, gyms, and doctor's offices, according to a new report by The Information. According to The Information's Amir Efradi, Google plans to sell Wi-Fi gear at steep discounts to businesses in exchange for managing their applications in its cloud and permission to extend wireless internet access to other Google customers. If the report's true, it could be part of a larger plan by Google to circumvent mobile carriers and use Wi-Fi to connect more of its customers to its services on the go. So it's kind of, you know, there was a company in Brazil, and I think they've done some stuff here where the router was very cheap, but one of the conditions was you had to, you know, had to publicly share out. Where this, I would assume, is going to be tied to kind of Google accounts, so they know who's using it. But that would mean that Google basically kind of trades; they give a discount Wi-Fi router to a business. But then it means that if you've got, you know, Google technology or you have an account, you'd be able to hook into it, and Google doesn't have to, you know, deploy LTE all over the country to make stuff available. So it's kind of clever. I think Google's one of the few companies that's big enough that they could possibly make this kind of thing work. So it'll be, you know, we'll see if this story turns out to be true, and second, see how it works once they maybe start deploying stuff. And finally, this one is it's an interesting approach. And it's going to be – this story will be interesting to see where it goes in the future. This was yesterday. Microsoft had their announcement for the next generation of the Surface, which is their tablet that runs, you know, kind of full-on Windows. The big rumors said that they were going to have a mini, you know, something along the lines of an iPad mini or, you know, the 7-inch, the kind of smaller tablets. But instead, Microsoft went the other way. They announced the Surface Pro 3, which is a 12-inch tablet. And then the thing that is most interesting about it of all is their target. And in the course of their presentation on it, they made it very clear what their target was, is they're comparing it to a MacBook Air as opposed to it being in competition with the iPad as a tablet. They're saying that it's the tablet/laptop replacement. The Surface Pro is bigger than its predecessor, but it's also thinner. It's 9 millimeters thick and it's lighter. It's lighter even than a MacBook Air, which, to show that it's lighter, they put a scale out, you know, one of those that's got the two trays and you put the stuff on each side. And then of course the heavier one sinks. So they showed that it was lighter than a MacBook Air, which I don't know if that's sort of a huge selling point. The things that are interesting with it is, you know, most tablets are, you know, they don't multitask and they are made to be to consume, you know, to read stuff on. And so they're kind of thought to be, you know, they're detuned from a full-on, say, laptop, where Microsoft is betting that people would like to have something that was pretty much a full-on laptop PC in a tablet. So far, they haven't been winning that bet, but this is certainly an interesting attempt to push it. It runs up to an Intel Core i7 for the processor, which is as thin and light as the device is pretty amazing. It does have a fan that's in there to keep that chip cool, but Microsoft promises their new, more efficient fan is essentially unnoticeable. That one will certainly hear one way or the other. Literally, we'll hear one way or the other whether that's true. And then the other big thing is it has a brand new hinge, which doesn't sound like a feature that, you know, oh, we've got a hinge on it. The difference with this one is it's not limited to the two positions of the previous Surface devices. It's got those. But it also has a very deep canvas mode that lets it be at a very low angle. So kind of, you know, the idea being that it's puts it like you would – so you would use it like it was a stylus or with like a, you know, touchpad kind of thing at a I don't know, a pretty low angle where you can still see it, but it's almost getting towards flat. They also think the new hinge is going to do a lot to help, this word they made up, lappability, and they've got some new type covers, which are the keyboard covers for the new bigger Surface. So far, reaction is kind of mixed. The ratio on the screen is 3:2, which makes it kind of look and feel like a pad of paper. That was sort of the sizing that they were going for on purpose. It does have a stylus, which is pen inspired and less stylus-y, to coin another word. To aid and encourage stylus use, Microsoft is pushing handwriting recognition in its apps, which could be a cool trick if it's ubiquitous and works. And then let's see. So their idea is that you could grab the Pro 3, even if it's sleeping, and start writing on it, and it'll work just like a pad of paper. It'll remember what you said. So, it costs $800 for a Core i3 rig. It's on sale today, so you could order one if you were so inclined to, sight unseen. Or if you look around, there's plenty of articles about the Pro. The thing that's interesting to me, though, is one of the stories that we didn't cover during the pledge drive, because there wasn't an info shot, is the price of the MacBook Air got dropped by $100 over those 3 weeks. And so the base Pro Surface Pro 3 starts at $800. That's without a keyboard. I think the keyboard's $130. The 11-inch MacBook Air is now $899. So you're actually talking about the prices being comparable. It may be that maybe that's why they aimed at the MacBook Air and not at the iPad Air, because of course the iPad Air is thinner and lighter than a Surface Pro 3. So just to outline it for the end of this, who's going to win the battle? Having a laptop and a tablet to handle your stuff, or a desktop and a tablet to handle your stuff? Or are people going to go for, in a big way, are they going to go for a tablet that's got the power of a laptop and can kind of work like a laptop? We'll keep an eye out. So far, the market has not said that they want a laptop or that they want a tablet with the power of a laptop. But we'll keep an eye on it, and we'll see if that changes Microsoft's fortunes in the tablet category. And that's the news. I'm Peter Hughes.
All right. Well, we were just goofing around in the studio, and I don't know if you remember, a couple of years ago, there was this program that came out, an app for the iPhone and for the Android, called World Lens, which allows you to point your camera, your phone camera, at text and have it translate between languages. And
real time with an overlay.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And when it came out, the demo version, you would just reverse the words. It would just let you reverse letters, and you could buy different language packs for Spanish, Portuguese, French, German, Italian, and Russian. And today, or yesterday, they announced that all of the language packs are now free. So the app is free, and the language packs are free. And so we've been in here translating everything into Russian since Flicked reads and speaks a bit of Russian. He's been amusing himself with the app on his phone and been able to tell us how accurate. It's really cool because it does it in real time. And it does it with the same color and basic font style of the text that it's reading.
It's not like closed captions that come over your TV. It actually takes out the text that it's taking a picture of and then replaces it.
Yeah. It's like a find and replace.
It matches the color, the font.
It matches the font color and the background color of whatever the font's on.
Yeah, so it's very handy if you're like trying to translate a menu. Or
you took Russian in college.
It's been a while.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Could inspire you to pick it up again.
Well, I was translating menus, like Italian menus and French menus, in here, and it told me, if I wanted.
Basically, whether it's a chicken
like,
or.
Oh my God! I've been eating that.
Yeah.
No, this could come in handy, and then I even pulled up a newspaper, and you was able to get what was going on with the newspapers. You could, I guess you could just surf to the site and say, "Hey, translate to English." But if you wanted to, you could read a newspaper through your phone. in another country.
Sadly, it doesn't have Icelandic as one of the languages, so won't help me on that trip. But it will help me on my trip to London. Cockney to English, English to Cockney. That would be... No. Bugger all. Oh, okay, I know what that means.
Let's have a butcher's.
All right.
So, the Duke Cockney rhyming slang, is that what
I'm Yeah, that would be awesome. All right, so we are going to move into the phone-in portion of the show. So if you want to be on the air, if you have a question that you'd like to ask or some technology issue you'd like to have us address, the phone number is 713-526-5738. If you want to be on the air tonight, all the lines are open. We're not begging you for money this week, so...
But we'll take it.
You can come out of your hidey holes and come at us with your best technology issues.
Yeah, if you don't call, we'll be in a bit of Barney Rubble.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I'm going to use up all my Cockney pretty soon.
It's going to go...
So, you know, pick up the dog and bone and give us a call.
Pick up the dog and bone.
That's using your loaf... I know a few.
You do apparently know a few. I mean, I don't have any way to
but
check
it's funny because
it.
It's Barney Rubble Trouble, Dog and Bone Phone, Loaf of Bread Head, Butcher's Hook Look.
Trouble and Strife Wife. That's one of them.
You can't just make these up.
No.
That's what they do.
All right, we see a call coming in, so I know Groovehouse is going to set himself ready to answer the call. What was that? He just aimed the phone at Flick. And he said, turn it down. You got to turn the mic down so that he can talk to the person and get him on the queue. Poor. Flick that's messing with Groovehouse. He shouldn't do that. All right. So, yeah, we're going to spend the next hour and 15 minutes taking your phone calls, questions, and so forth on the air. If you'd like to participate, that's what Technology Bites is all about. I know we had some people call it in last week and the week during the fundraiser having some computer questions and wanted us to address them, but we couldn't do that because we had to spend our time talking to you about raising money. But now that's all done. And Groovehouse has successfully screened a couple of calls.
I was doing the, you know, like, I move away from the mic to breathe. I have to be careful when I say who did that, though. Because last time I said it on the air, I got it wrong, and it was...
You got a whole bunch of email.
It was a bad situation.
Oh, no, I'm not following.
You didn't get Mr. Zonde? Or did you say it incorrectly?
I couldn't think of his name, and I said...
Tay?
Yeah.
Said something else.
Yeah, I said the wrong person's name. And
you're failing all over the place.
Well, that was like a year or two ago.
Oh, okay. I totally remember it.
I still remember it.
It still pages.
Yeah.
I'm still getting email.
Is that why they're looking at me that way? They remember, don't they? Oh, my God. Is the podcast still available? I hope they deleted that. Yeah. All right. Groovehouse.
Yes.
I see we have calls in the queue.
Yes, we do.
Who is it and what do they want?
All right. Up first on the show, we're going to speak with Marianne.
Marianne, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hi. I was wondering if you guys could help me with a problem.
Sure. Why not?
Well, it's been about 2 weeks now that my computer started slowing down. And the internet slows down quite a bit. Especially like when I'm opening my messages, when I'm going into my email, and I'm not too sure what could be causing that. I don't think I have a virus.
Because?
I'm sorry?
You don't think you have a virus because you've scanned for viruses, or?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
I have virus protection.
All right.
And?
How old is the computer? Give or take.
2 years.
2 years?
Oh, 2 years, yeah.
So is it running Windows 7?
Well, no, I don't have Windows 7. I had XP.
So you bought a computer 2 years ago with XP? Was it 2 years old? Was it brand new when you bought it?
Yes.
Really? So where did you find a computer with XP on it 2 years ago?
I bought it at Walmart.
Ah, okay. So things become into focus. So you bought a computer at Walmart running Windows XP and everything was great. Do you happen to know how much memory it has?
I think I have, yes, I did check it, but I can't remember offhand, but it still has, like, at least a third.
Okay, so I'm not talking about the hard drive space, I'm talking about the RAM memory. Is it 2 gigs or 4 gigs or 8 gigs of
or
RAM?
Or 1 gig.
Or 1 gig.
Or 512 meg.
If you don't know the answer, it's okay. You can say you don't know.
I can't remember.
That's okay.
I did check that, but I don't remember right now offhand.
Well,
I know it's pretty low.
Okay.
I know it's low. I think it's like one or two.
Okay. One of the things that happens when people buy a computer is that they quickly run out and they start installing software on it. And as you add more software to the computer, not only does it take up hard drive space, but certain things start running in the background and they can slow it down. So if you got a computer that was kind of underpowered when it was new, it could be bogged down with a lot of background applications running that are chewing up processes. It's also possible that even though you don't think you have a virus, that you might have a spyware problem, and your antivirus won't necessarily catch that. So there are some tools that we recommend on our website at geekradio.com, particularly Malwarebytes, which you might want to download the free version and scan your system and see if it detects anything. Other than that, you know, if you can't answer some of the questions about your PC that we have, I mean, I don't know how much I could help you. One of the things I find that will boost your performance is if you add more RAM to the computer. So if you only have 1 gig, I would consider going to, you know, to 4. Even if you have 2 gigs, I would consider going to 4. It's a relatively inexpensive upgrade.
You can if you know the model of and brand of your computer, you can go online and there's some sites that will, if you Google.
Do you happen to know that? Do you have the computer in front of you?
Yes, I do.
Is it a laptop or a desktop?
Desktop.
All right. What's the make and model of it? Who makes it?
It's an e-machine.
E-machine, okay. Do you have a model number on it?
Let's see.
It's like an E6 something or a... So are you crawling under the desk?
Yeah, I think it's probably be on the desk.
All right, tell you what. I'm going to let you go and go to the website and check out the Malwarebytes and see about scanning your system for possible spyware, see if that helps you out. I would recommend talking to somebody about upgrading your RAM. If you've only got 1 or 2 gigs, you'll definitely see a performance increase if you upgrade that RAM memory, and it'll make things go a little bit better. But a lot of times what happens is that as you use the computer, it could get some different programs on there that are causing you issues. And if it's spyware, you want to get rid of it, obviously. If you've got a ton of applications installed, if you're not using them, you might want to uninstall them. And another thing you can do is, go online and do some research on tuning up your computer. There's some basic maintenance in terms of cleaning out temp files and terminating running processes and so forth that might help you out. Wish you a lot of luck. All right, Groove House.
Yes.
Do I see Kate online too?
Yes, you do.
My old friend Kate.
Oh, it's your old friend Kate.
My old friend Kate.
Kate.
Kate, my old friend Kate.
Hi.
Hello, Kate.
How's it going, Jay?
It's good. I can't tell you how delighted I am to hear from you. I know.
Well, I'm delighted that I remembered to call you guys.
I know. You know, you did what so few people do, is they contact me on Facebook or email and with a computer question, and then they say, well, I'll call into the show, and then I never hear from them. But you are a woman of your word.
I did it.
Yeah. All right. So what's your question for us tonight, Kate?
So last night, my mom calls me, and apparently she's on the other line.
Kate? Kate, yes? Dear, are you there?
Yes.
I have a computer problem. I was imitating your mother. Sorry.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, she was actually on the other line with somebody.
Somebody.
Who was trying to tell her that they could tell that her computer was infected with a bunch of stuff, and she was like, really? Okay, well, let's go investigate that. And so she went to their website.
So she got one of those calls where somebody just called her out of the blue?
Yes, cold call.
And said, we're with Microsoft.
AMMYY scam or whatever. Mm-hmm. So they call and they say that they can see stuff on your computer, and they ask you to go to a website, and then they remote into your machine.
Right, and they show you all the running processes that you've got going that are completely legitimate and say, look, spyware, viruses.
Yeah, or they just make stuff up.
Yeah.
And then they start saying, well, I'd be happy to clean all this up for you as well if you will pay me, you know, hundreds of dollars. And that was when the light went off. I'm thankful, as angry as I am about the fact that she let a stranger onto her computer, I am very thankful that she stopped before she gave them any money, because that was where it was headed. And I was like, no, please hang up. Don't do it.
So they started calling you to see if you approved of whatever it is she was about to spend money on?
Yeah, exactly.
But she did
do
give
them. Do I really mean to do this? No.
No, but she gave them access to her computer, so they installed their remote control software and they started poking around.
Yeah, so after trying to walk her through some menu stuff and just check around, I was like, just turn it off, unplug everything, and bring it over here tomorrow. And, you know, to be honest, I feel like I've neglected her as a daughter because that computer, like, I'm embarrassed to think about how old it is. It's just an old laptop that when I got my Mac, I gave her that one. But the thing is, you know, she's not internet or technology savvy, so I want to get her something that's easy for her to use but that I can also lock down.
Right.
So that, you know, it's safe for her and I don't have to worry as much, or at least that I can remote into if I have to. But, you know, I don't also want to make her learn an entirely new operating system. You know, she's used to Windows. I think it would be honestly more of a headache for me to try to get her to switch over to a Mac.
What was the version of Windows that was on that one?
XP, I'll bet.
Probably.
Yeah, because unless she's going to go back to XP, there's going to be a learning curve with Windows.
Yeah, no, because you have, like, if you go to 8, it's all touchscreen looking. And
what would she do? What was she doing on her computer, aside from, like, letting strangers in?
She says she needs to print stuff out. She says she needs to save files. And I'm like, I don't think you really need to do that. You've got paper all over your house.
She does some
point of having a
list
computer.
Programming.
little Erlang.
Some video editing.
What about, like, you know, you've never worked with Linux or anything like that. I always go in way too overboard on this stuff.
You're talking about Kate's.
Yeah.
Kate's technically savvy.
No, but Linux Mint actually is...
Looks like XP.
You can get an XP overlay for it that actually looks really similar to XP, and it's not that difficult to use because I installed it on an old desktop and gave it to my fiance and her.
I'd heard that Linux wasn't even Mint, that it's really XP with a couple of custom themes.
All right, based on your knowledge and experience with your mother, what does she do with her computer?
I think she just does her email and maybe works on a few Word documents or something, you know, gets on the internet, plays solitaire, you know, nothing too major.
Right.
So,
I mean, certainly if the hardware's still good, you could just reload it. You could reinstall XP or whatever the recovery disks, if you can find them. Is it like a Dell or an HP or something? Or?
It's a Dell.
I mean, do you have the recovery software for it?
Maybe.
Okay. Well, if you're thinking about buying a new computer, the problem you're going to have is that, like Flicted was talking about, you're going to buy a computer probably with Windows 8,
mm-hmm.
and it is dramatically
different
than Windows XP. I say dramatic. The interface is startlingly different, but if you logic it out, it's kind of the same.
I've been a Mac person since 2002, but okay. People I've talked to that didn't want to get off of XP, and when they eventually did, the people who have gone to Macs have actually said that it was a fairly low learning curve for them, that it felt fairly intuitive.
Right.
So that it wasn't, I mean, the interface does look different, but with a few exceptions, it was pretty easy for them to get on it and start using it and not have too much difficulty.
And since you know the Mac, Kate, mm-hmm. right? You know the Mac, you know that you could, you know, if you set her up with a new Mac, if that's where the route you want to go, all you got to do is throw an icon for, you know, the web browser, an icon for the email down on the dock, and off she goes.
Well, yeah. And I will say also that I bought my parents, or actually I bought myself a new Mac Mini, and I gave my parents my old Mac Mini that was only a year or two old, and
they're doing
for the
fine.
Most part, they have not had any problems.
Yeah, I was about to say, that's get a new machine for you, pass a machine that you know like the back of your hand that you could support remotely.
Yeah, there's an idea.
Yeah, and then because she doesn't need a lot of power.
Opportunity for shopping for Kate.
Yeah. Your mother's problem becomes your opportunity.
Yeah.
Your mother wants you.
I'm doing this for you, Mom.
Mom would want you to have a new computer for all your efforts in getting her
That's
up
right.
and running and saving her from the evil Amy scam.
I know.
She owes you.
Now she's just going to fall for the Kate scam.
Hey, you can do this for her, please. Just do it.
Well, I think there's some valid points for switching to a Mac in terms of just there's going to be a little bit of a learning curve anyway, and there is remote control software
mm-hmm.
for the Apple.
Well, and if you're on a Mac, yeah, it's pretty easy.
You can disable her account. You can say she can do this, she can't do that. You know, you can kind of lock it down a little bit, and you can give yourself the administrator privileges and just create a user account for her.
But you just put totally different meaning in the term parental control.
Controlling my rents.
But the thing is, you know, if you're considering Apple, obviously, generally they're more expensive to get into than a lower end PC. But if you're passing on one that you already own, then you're upgrading yours, and that's your own cost.
Yeah. Well, I was also thinking about switching to like a Chromebook or something, which, you know, I heard about when it came out, but I haven't really looked at. I don't think I've even laid hands on one. But I know that there's probably some actual programs that she would want to run rather than. I think that might be.
Well, that'll be an issue if she uses something like Microsoft Word or Microsoft Office package. You'd have to get the version of that for the Mac. What do you use?
Oh, there's a lot of alternatives.
Open Office. What do you use for your word processing? Do you have a copy of like Office for the Mac or?
I think I have iWork or whatever came with it. I mean, a word processor is a word processor.
Well, for you and I, that's true. Yeah. But for your mother, that may not be true.
True.
There's so, also, like, even if you consider a Chromebook. Like, there's certain things. I mean, solitaires, of course, there's 4,000 different versions of solitaire you can play. But there's a lot of widgets built into Chromebook that you can auto-install so that actually when you bring it up, there's actually an apps list on the main page that pops up that can have solitaire or whatever, like a bunch of things that are just icons in the browser that you can click on.
I kind of like Chromebook, but for the guy that suggested Linux, I think Chromebook may be a little bit too far of a departure for her.
Well, or what about an iPad with a keyboard case?
Yeah, I don't know about that.
I mean, that would get her access to the internet. That would get her access to email.
Can you download documents and print them? Or
you can print. You have to air print. Mm-hmm. Her printer's probably not air print capable.
Edible, yeah.
But for the cost of an iPad and an AirPrint ready HP printer,
and you can get her a keyboard too, an external keyboard. If she didn't, if she wasn't used to actually typing on the screen, if she actually types a decent amount.
She's got arthritis, so doing any kind of touchscreen stuff is always difficult.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what she has now is an old laptop. It's like a 13 or 14 inch screen.
I don't know. I don't.
It's been so long since I dumped that piece of crap on her. I forget. All right, well, you know, I mean, he could certainly shop. Here's an option for you. Here's another option. Since if money's an issue, you might consider going down to CompuWorks over on Westheimer, just outside the Beltway. It's the Goodwill Computer Store.
Okay.
And they should have a machine there probably of good specs that's running XP.
Okay.
And you could get a good used computer, something that somebody's donated that they've, you know, kind of spiffed up for a really good price and just swap her out.
Or get three or four of them and have spares when that one breaks.
True.
All right. Well, does that help at all?
Yeah.
All right. Well, listen, we're coming up on the top of the hour. We have to take our little station break, so we have to let you go now.
Okay. That's fine. Nice to talk to you guys.
Good to talk to you. Have a good night.
You too.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye.
All right. You're listening to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
And he's
Groovehouse.
We'll be right back after these messages.
El patrocinio de Radio Escuchas es una respuesta práctica al problema de obtener y mantener mejores programas de radio. Un enfoque a anunciantes o a las audiencias masivas considera mediocridad de la radio comercial. Con esta mediocridad, el mejoramiento de la radio es una utopía. Cuando los radioescuchas apoyan la radio que ellos disfrutan, sus opciones son mejores. El patrocinio de radioescuchas les permite tomar el control de su radio, de las manos de compañías y las pone en manos de la comunidad. Pero mantener este tipo de radio requiere de usted. Su donación es nuestro apoyo para mantener KPFT en el aire como un recurso vital de la comunidad. Así que visite la página de internet www.kpft.org para convertirse en un miembro el día de hoy. Su donación es esencial para mantener viable el patrocinio de Radio Escuchas para las generaciones por venir. Esta es Libre de Comerciales, patrocinada por Radio Escuchas, Radio Pacífica, KPFT, Houston.
KPFT's 24 hours of broadcasting 7 days a week covers a lot of different people and lifestyles. Some listen late at night in bed, and some wake up to KPFT in the morning. KPFT is here when you need great independent news and music throughout the day. But keeping this resource alive and kicking doesn't come cheap. KPFT racks up bills. From the antenna to the lights to the staff, KPFT needs your contribution to keep this unique radio station around when you need it. Imagine if you paid for that late night or morning hour. How much would you pay? Your support of this community radio station costs just pennies per hour of listening. So why wait for a pledge drive? If you're listening as you go to bed or when you get up for work, why not call KPFT's membership department and become a member. The number is easy to remember, 713-526-4000, extension 314, to join KPFT, or visit kpft.org to pledge online. This is KPFT Houston.
You're listening to 90.1 FM KPFT Houston.
Hey, Barrett, what's happening?
I don't know.
Well, room around town.
We interrupt this skit to bring you
Baritime! Baritime! Baritime!
Yeah. That means it's time for
Baritime!
Yeah. Anyway. Take it away, Barrett.
Okay. Now, before I say the A word, we're going to start with a little trivia. What do the following items have in common? A toothbrush, a face flannel, soap, a tin of biscuits, a flask, a compass, a map, a ball of string, gnat spray, wet weather gear, and a space suit.
This is a plan for when I was going to come over tonight.
$1,000 movie.
Wow, first guess, yeah. All right, everyone else, please hold your answers for a few minutes as we now return to our regularly scheduled Barrett time. All right. So with KPFT, with the KPFT Fund Drive thankfully behind us, some of you may be wondering what to do with your newfound towels. That is, unless none of you picked up the KPFT Beach towel as a thank you gift, which, judging by our numbers, is entirely possible. Luckily, we didn't panic. Not because our souls had collapsed underneath the weight of Ernesto abandoning us last week, but rather because we had towels. Maybe not with us, but, you know, in our hearts. Which is good, because Towel Day is fast approaching. Sunday, May 25th, is the day on which we all pull our towels out of our hearts, our hampers, or wherever we may keep them, and proudly parade them in public in tribute to Douglas Adams, the author of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy series of science fiction books, on his birthday, actually. As the guide puts it, to know where one's towel is means to be in control of one's own life. Now, there are multiple takes on the towel, as evidenced by the number of them that have graced the different radio, television, and movie productions of the guide, and not every one of the books carries your garden-variety Turkish bath towel. In fact, one hitchhiker and researcher for the guide fortified his towel with yellow stripes high in protein, green stripes with vitamin supplements, pink flowers of wheat germ extract, and other areas containing barbecue sauce and antidepressants. Now, while you could probably get the same effect by dropping your towel in my guest bathroom, you're free to modify your towel as you see fit. Which leads us to the answer of the trivia question. Those are all things. Does anyone else want to take a guess? Yes.
Zork.
So close, yeah.
Rogan poetry.
But yeah, Groove pretty much has it. Those are all things that a non-hitchhiker may assume the hitchhiker is in possession of if the non-hitchhiker or strag sees the hitchhiker with a towel. Yep, it's from the beginning of the book. So, it's also important to note that the phrase, don't forget to bring a towel, is not from The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, but rather the animated television series South Park. Can anyone match the catchphrase to the name of the character?
Tally.
Tally, exactly, yeah. Now, Tally doesn't always promote what is best for today's youth, and is often seen promoting cannabis use to the kids in the show. Of course, the FBI is aware of this. Which is good, though not in the way that you may think. Congress has authorized the FBI to add 2,000 new agents to its rosters in an attempt to tackle the growing number of cybercrimes being committed on a daily basis. The issue is that many of today's talented information security professionals would be barred from working for the Bureau due to having consumed cannabis in the past 3 years. So, when addressing his plan to add talent to the FBI's cybercrime efforts, James B. Comey said yesterday that, quote, I have to hire a great workforce to compete with those cyber criminals, and some of those kids want to smoke weed on the way to the interview. So he admitted the Bureau is looking into softening up their stance on softening up their stance and going so far as to encourage those who may have not applied to the FBI in the past to do those concerns to go ahead and do so now. So while the FBI isn't quite ready to throw in the towel on cybercrime, a number of other information security researchers are when it comes to protecting against anything, mainly due to their stance that everything is broken. Now, while that may seem a bit bleak and pessimistic, there is one bright side to all this. One of the people bringing these issues to light will be appearing in an upcoming documentary titled How Anything Can Be Hacked, Freaked Out. And that person is a longtime friend of the show, Matthew Solnick. And I'll ask that Jay not get too teary-eyed as he thinks about all of our chicks leaving the nest, but birds gotta fly and hackers gotta hack. And even the city of Houston realizes this as they host their own hackathon the weekend of May 31st. The City of Houston Hackathon is an annual 24-hour civic event hacking celebration. Participants can bring their own ideas or work on one of the sample projects provided. Things get started at noon on Saturday with the deadline of 12 o'clock high on Sunday. Several prizes up for grabs, including a cybersecurity award for the best application that educates businesses and public, and the public about cybersecurity issues. Then after the hackathon, five teams will be invited to City Hall for a private meeting with the mayor and her senior staff. Kind of cool. So you can get more info on the event by surfing to HoustonHackathon.ChallengePost.com. Houston Hackathon, no hyphen in there. And what more could we possibly have to celebrate? Well, Ethernet also has a birthday tomorrow. So turning 41 in just, I guess, 3 short hours, Ethernet will probably reflect upon his life and wonder where the last decade went when he was busy shoveling packets for someone else's profit. Or he may just go home and code himself to sleep. So that's it for Towel Day Tie-Dye FBI FYI, and that's that for Barrett Time. So long, and thanks for all the pledges.
Wow. So missed. Such funny.
Back in the 80s, they had a hackathon, but it was a smoker's rights thing, and it was a totally different kind of thing.
All right. So that's nice to have a Barrett Time, and it just warms my heart. Warms my heart. All right, if you want to be on the air for the second half of the show, the phone number is 713-526-5738 or 713-526-KPFT to be on the air with us and ask your computer-related questions. I see we have a call in the queue. All the other lines are open, so feel free to dial in and put Groovehouse to work. In the meantime, Groovehouse,
yes.
Who do we have?
Up next on the second half of the show, we're going to kick it off with Gary.
Gary, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hello. I read Jay Lee's column in the paper, and one of the questions was that this fellow had been advised that everyone should just get rid of their Windows XP. And
actually, the question was that everyone should get rid of Internet Explorer.
Okay, well, I have had some very amazing adventures in the last 2 weeks with my Internet Explorer on Windows XP. I have Explorer 8. And I wanted to share some of these three facts so that people that have XP and Explorer don't get all freaked out like it seems everybody is, what with Heartbleed and the recent breach and the lack of support and all these things going on. So the first thing that happened was I went in, and I'm with AT&T, and I accessed my email through Yahoo. And I would click on Yahoo Mail. Google is my homepage, so I'd bring up Google, and then I'd click on Mail after I entered Yahoo, and it would just sit there for all night long. No connection at all. So I finally called AT&T support, and they explained that Yahoo had some outages, national and worldwide, and they kind of gave me a back door where I could go into the main field and put in where to go to get my email, and it did indeed work. And while I was there, it was is Yahoo Connected was one selection. I clicked on it, and it had a little map of the outages, and there were like 1,600 emails of people irate, pissed off. They hadn't been able to get their email for weeks and weeks, and Yahoo was out in Britain, South Africa, Romania, half of the United States, Texas, Florida, Georgia.
I got it. Lots of places.
Okay, so turns out that it was not, I thought my computer had been hacked. I got a virus and I was kicked out. It was a Yahoo outage, and they even told me that. So then the next day I go in, and son of a gun, I can't get in again. And for 3 days, so I called them again, and they went into my control panel and had me delete my browser history and a half a dozen other things. And for 3 days now, I just get Internet Explorer cannot access this site. And I thought, geez, here we go again. I've been hacked. I got about. Well, I went in tonight. Boom, it's gone. It turns out it said that I had a modem connection problem, but it turns out that. That can't be true because I got through to my dial-up connection immediately and had no problems there. Well, it turns out it was a server issue that they were having, and it had nothing to do with Yahoo, and it had nothing to do with Google. It was a connection issue at the server. Now, that's twice. Now, I thought I'd been hacked and got a virus. So my message is for people with XP and Explorer, don't panic. There's a lot of crap going on. Now, here's the third and last thing. I went finally after all these years to my mortgage company, a bank, and I talked about having my loan refinanced, and he said he'd send me an email. Well, son of a gun, couldn't get into email again, and I thought, oh, geez. The next day...
You always go to a dark place, don't you?
this is interesting to some people.
I'm not really convinced on that just yet. You haven't sold me. You know, Gary, you wait just for a second. I'm going to cut you off just a second here. I appreciate what you're saying, but this hasn't really gone anywhere.
Well, I'm trying to tell people with Internet Explorer and XP that I've had some serious issues in the last 2 weeks.
It sounds like you've had some issues that could be affecting a lot of people.
But none of them had anything to do with my computer or Internet Explorer or having Windows XP.
That's fine, but that's not necessary. I mean, the fact that you had these problems and they were not related to XP and Internet Explorer does not take away from the fact that XP and Internet Explorer are extremely vulnerable and need to be considered to be, you know, moved away from with expediency.
But it does.
Had you had a second browser on your computer, such as Google Chrome or Firefox, at least to mitigate some of the potential problems that might come from Internet Explorer, might have even helped you come to the conclusion that it was a server issue or a Yahoo issue a lot quicker. But the fact that you've had computer problems and you're using XP and you're using Internet Explorer and the problems weren't related to that does not necessarily mean that it's okay to continue using these outdated and insecure operating system and web browsers.
I agree 100%, but it seems like every call you get lately is about XP, and not every problem people are experiencing.
I don't think there's been any indication that just because you're having a problem does not necessarily mean that it's because it's XP or because it's Internet Explorer.
That's my point.
But that's not to say that you wouldn't have a better experience if you had something that was running a little bit better. But absolutely, there could be outages at Yahoo. There could be internet provider outages. There's all kinds of things that could go wrong. You can actually have physical hardware failure that doesn't have anything to do with what operating system or what software you're using.
Right. Well, that's the problem. You can't ever tell if you've been hacked, if you've got a problem with your computer, if your line is not connected.
Well,
properly. That's
where basic troubleshooting comes in. That's where you say, you know, okay, what's going on here? Well, let's trace this out. Let's figure out where the breakdown is. What's going on? I mean, there are a number of things just in what you've described in terms of what you're using that are problem that I have a problem with. Even if you're running Windows XP and you're running an Internet Explorer, mail services such as Yahoo, which are notoriously unreliable. I mean, not that they're necessarily insecure or vulnerable or anything, but just because they tend to go down all the time.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, yeah. I would consider certainly going with a more reliable.
Well, I went out to buy a new. I wanted to get an Android pad, and I didn't have a spare $800. But let me tell you my last little thing.
Okay.
So I talked to the mortgage company, and they sent me some information, and by golly, my email, and I've been hacked again.
Bye bye. Yeah, all right, sorry about that, but Gary is not really going anywhere and going to a dark place again. All right, 713-526-5738 is the number to call if you'd like to be on the air with us here on Technology Bytes. All of our lines are open. I see Groovehouse is fielding a call as we speak, so hooray for that as we move. Wow, this show's going by so fast, unlike last week's show, which seemed to last forever.
So long, and thanks for all the fishing.
Thanks. Or you could have just said fish. You know, implied the pH.
And all of our XP-using callers tonight get a pair of peril-sensitive sunglasses.
The takeaway.
Hey, you know, the world lens is a bit of a babblefish, if you think about it.
Takeaway from Gary was don't panic.
Don't
he
panic.
He did say that. Did that say actually, it. there was a golden piece in that whole call.
Yep.
The don't panic was an inadvertent little...
Oops. But it was gold.
It was gold.
Oh. This doesn't relate at all to this conversation, except that Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy made me think of Doctor Who, and Doctor Who made me think of the fact that Comicpalooza
is this weekend.
And there's going to be a whole bunch of Doctor Who's there, like five or six of them, I think.
That's this weekend, too?
That's this weekend,
oh,
yeah.
Oh, wow. It's already the end of May.
And six from Battlestar Galactica is going to be there, and...
Got Jay choked up.
Bunch of people from
oh baby,
Marvel Agents of Shield.
Stan Lee's gonna be there.
What?
Stan Lee's gonna be there.
What?
Yeah, I'll be out there. Well, to be fair, okay. So, can we talk about what's happening to you and your big announcement?
I don't know.
That's a no.
About
The
fact that you're getting married.
Yeah.
Afflicted's getting married. To a woman,
not to Barrett.
Not tonight to Barrett.
It's a bachelor party tonight, though. No, so Flick is getting married, and because Flick did, you know, I don't know what Flick did's motivation is exactly, but he's decided that he would recruit an engagement photographer from within his circle of friends, which means me and Groovehouse. And Groovehouse smartly and quickly distanced himself from the request. And I'm always
up for a challenge.
I'm actually disappointed that I will not get to go. I mean, I've been invited to my fair share of weddings, and I generally just try to steer clear. I don't go. I don't want to go to anybody's weddings. I don't photograph weddings, but I want to go to your wedding, and you're having your wedding when I'm out of town. So
Planned it.
I know. Not really.
So we're getting you a telepresence robot.
With a camera attached. It'll be an iPad, telepresence iPad. Click, click. No, so I don't get to go to the wedding. So I thought, you know, this would be a nice thing to do. I'll work out a deal and do this engagement photo shoot for Afflicted and Heather. And everything's kind of lining up, trying to get it all sorted out. And, of course, you know, trying to negotiate with these two people, their schedules. Like, when can you – where are we going to do it? What are we going to do? I'm not a coordinator. I'm not, like, a big planner. But everything was dancing around and landed on this weekend. And I thought, well, crud. Comicpalooza's this weekend. But fortunately, it goes on. Comicpalooza is Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And part of Monday even. So it's
thought fortunately they wanted to get their engagement pictures with various Doctor Who's.
That would have been awesome. That could have been cool. But I was really, and I'm trying to juggle my schedule, so I'm angling to go. So I was going to go to Comicpalooza on Saturday, so I kept hinting at Sunday or Monday, but everything kept falling on Saturday. So, all right, fine, we'll just do it on Saturday, and I'll go out to Comicpalooza on Sunday. Because also the weather on Monday is not looking so good either. So that's my story. You're welcome.
Because we're gonna get shots of us showing our senior rings on standing in front of live oak trees.
<Jeez. sighs> 713. What?
I can dress up as Amanda Pond if you want a shot with the doctor.
I could just do that.
Photobomb. You're gonna tell me where they're shooting, right, Jay?
Transgender cosplay Doctor Who? Is that what you're doing?
Flick is going to dress as Sailor Moon. We'll just leave it at that. All right.
They're going to play the uncensored Sailor Moons on Hulu. Hulu Plus.
Uncensored English Sailor Moons on Hulu?
Yes.
Yay.
And then have new programs.
Why were they censored?
There was stuff that was censored. I think there were characters that they actually changed the gender of and the voice actors of. because they didn't because they it was homophobia kind of stuff.
Hmm.
I've never actually watched any Sailor Moon stuff.
Too light for you?
I'm not really into Japanese
anime,
anime or manga or anything, so I've just never gotten into it.
All right. All right, 713-526-5738. So, Barrett, you want me to tell you where we're going to be shooting on Saturday?
I was kidding. I'm really not going to show up and dress as Amanda Pond. We're going to get that out of our systems tonight, and we're going to put it to bed and put it behind us. So,
all right, 713-526-5738. Groovehouse, who do we have up?
Up next, we're going to speak with Jim.
Jim, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Thank you. Congratulations, Lifted.
Thank you.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Got a laptop, MacBook Pro, with Boot Camp and Mac. I got two hard drives in it. What some buddies of mine are doing, they're running the Boot Camp, a small Boot Camp partition, but launching other Windows OSs in VHDs, virtual hard disks. And I'm thinking of doing that, and I'd just like y'all's comment on doing something like that.
Well, I'm not familiar with VHD necessarily. I've got some experience with Parallels and VMware.
Right.
So what is it that, what's your ultimate goal? I mean, you just want to run. Go ahead.
The easiest thing is we deal with a lot of different operating systems, and with a software, new software comes out, we install it. We run it on, you know, we used to run it in VMs, but this guy, a colleague of mine, creates virtual hard disks, has a small Boot Camp partition, you know, 50 gig Boot Camp partition, but then he creates a VHD for Windows 7, a VHD for Windows 8, et cetera, and uses those, and then apparently they're pretty easy to clean off and restart.
Yeah, I mean, what we can do is, like, when you, you know, with Boot Camp, you can install different operating systems into, I guess, basically, it's not even a partition. Is it a partition? So you partition the drive off,
right,
and you install Windows 7. You make another partition for Windows 8. You could do it that way and mess with your disk partitions. But there's an easier way to do it if you use a virtualization suite or package such as VMware or Parallels. So what it allows you to do is you have your Mac, you install Parallels, and then you...
Right.
Install an operating system into a basically as an application, so you can.
Right.
And I'm using Parallels on my computer, and I have Windows 7, and I have Windows 8, and I can tab back and forth. But you know, use the. I can use a full screen, a whole separate screen, and it looks just like I'm running Windows on the computer, and I can install apps into the Windows that I can then run straight from the Mac. So if I need to run, say, for example, Microsoft Office for Windows, and want to run Excel, I could just launch Excel, and it kind of, in the background, fires up the Windows operating system and then shows me the Excel spreadsheet.
Okay. Can you, from your Windows Parallel, can you access files on the HFS partition?
Yes.
Okay.
You can access all the files. Basically, when you load Windows, the desktop will be a Windows desktop with all of your desktop items that you would see. And then also creates a different folder for your Windows apps. So when you're running Mac, you can go over to this folder. It has your Windows apps. You can just click on the app and fire it up.
But
you have access to all your files. And what's cool is that it's kind of like the Boot Camp, where you're going to have a thing in your documents folder, which is the virtual operating system. And if you get tired of it, or you can create a snapshot of it and freeze it in time, and then have a copy of it, and you can back that up. And so anytime you need to just blow it away and start over, you just drop in a copy of the operating system as a file or as a folder, and you're ready to go. The virtual machine will fire it up. There's no playing around with choosing a boot operating system or anything like that. Were you going to chime in on there or something?
No, I like the fact that everything Jay said, plus you can copy and paste between operating systems, which is really nice. I mean, we just waste a lot of time having to bounce between OSs when there's no reason to if you go the virtual way like Jay's talking about.
Yeah, that's once virtual technology got to the point where it was stable and functional and it could run on machines that I owned, I greatly prefer that because if you're dual booting or multi booting, you know, you basically have to shut down the machine that you're using to boot into the other machine. And so, to me, the only time that that's really worthwhile is if you're really in a situation where you're testing something where the OS needs to be on the base layer of the system, and it can't be
a virtual. Yeah, it has to have direct access to the hardware layer.
Because it might mess up whatever pieces of software you're testing. But if that's not the case, then I personally think, you know, running virtuals is the way to go. Because you can have multiple, if as long as you have enough memory, you can have multiple virtuals running at the same time of different OS
versions. And you can use corners and switch back and forth between the operating systems. So I could go over to my Windows operating. And the other good thing about doing it as a virtual, what they call a virtual machine, is that you don't have to bother with installing the Windows drivers or the Linux drivers or whatever for your hardware. It piggybacks off the drivers from the host operating system. So your sound card works, your wireless works, it bridges the internet connection. And so you can plug in a flash drive. So if you're running Parallels, for example, you plug in a flash drive or a USB device, it will ask you which operating system you want to have access to that.
I see that,
So it's very nice in that regard. And a program like Parallels is not very expensive, and then you only have to pay for the operating systems that you want to install.
Right.
And
I have VMware.
VMware is the...
I tried Parallels years ago, and it wasn't quite as good. Maybe it's gotten better.
It has improved a lot over the years, and... Okay. Also, the VMware is another very strong one. VMware we use at my office for a lot of our virtualization. We use enterprise level VMware.
Yeah, VMware is like the big commercial product that most people product that gets used.
Okay.
I use VirtualBox because it's free.
But VirtualBox won't run on a Mac, will it?
Yeah, that's what I run it on. Yeah, that's what I've been using it for.
Several years. Microsoft only Windows product.
No. Which one are you talking about? VMware?
VirtualBox.
VirtualBox, which is free, is a good, at least to play around with virtualization.
And I actually run it on Linux boxes also, Linux systems.
Right, yeah, because I run a Paladin, which is a version of the Ubuntu kernel.
Now, the other if you're interested in multi-boots, you can always consider live CDs, for not for Windows so much, but for all of your Unix platforms. You can make a bootable flash drive or a bootable disk.
Sure.
But it doesn't even write anything to the hard drive. You don't mess with your partitions.
See, I lost interest in dual boots and multi-boots pretty quickly, and I pretty quickly years ago was
learned
like,
about live.
You know what? I would rather just buy more cheap systems and install each one and actually bring them up and leave them running and switch monitors.
I don't like giving up the downtime.
Yeah.
Well, they also make...
Uptime, sorry. Flip that.
Yeah, I mean, the even as fast as the stuff boots up now, I don't even want to waste my time doing that. But I like Flickr's idea with multiple machines because they've actually got... they've got network mouse drivers, so you can actually install this program on all of your computers and run a mouse and a keyboard across multiple computers.
Synergy
over multiple computers. So I was watching this guy who had a Linux computer, an Apple computer, and a Windows computer, and I think even a Sun OS computer. Four monitors on his desk, all four computers running at the same time, one mouse, one keyboard, and he just took that mouse cursor and went across all four screens. I was like,
how do you do that without a KVM switch?
It's all virtual.
It's software.
It does it over TCP/IP.
Oh, okay. So and you got to be all on the same network then.
Yeah. So Synergy, which is a free program too, you can use it. You set up which computer is on which side. It's fantastic.
It's like a network.
You can even copy and paste. With
That's like a network KVM switch is how you want to think about it.
Gotcha. Oh, that's cool. I'll have to look into that.
Yeah. So you have lots of options.
Well, super. Well, thanks, guys. Once again, you guys are great. I appreciate it.
Appreciate your call. Thanks.
Uh-huh.
And good night. Bye. You know, Barrett, you kind of do look like Amy Pond. She's not quite as thin on the top as you are.
Is that good or bad?
All right, 713-526-5738. 713-526-KPFT is the number to call if you want to be on the air with us.
I think Amy Pond sounds better than Amanda Pond.
It's actually Amelia Pond.
Because you said
Amelia Pond.
I said Amanda Pond. I meant Amelia Pond.
You said, I'll be Amanda Pond.
I'll be a man upon.
Amanda Huggin King.
I'll be a man upon. That's not what he signed up. I did not sign up for a man upon. You'd be a man of petty.
I don't know. Next call.
713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air. I see you have all these open lines except for one. Who do we have, Groovehouse?
That would be Jeff.
Hello, Jeff. You're on the air.
Hi. I have an iPhone 4S, and my question is, like, is it safe if I jailbreak it? And my question.
I will tell you that if you're calling into a radio show to ask if it's safe to jailbreak your iPhone 4S, then probably not. But why do you want to jailbreak it?
Because of free apps.
The free apps?
Yes.
You want to install Cydia?
Cydia. Yes. Well, here, okay, so the iPhone 4S is old enough so the phone is not under warranty. So you don't have to worry about that. But you
feel. No, it's not under warranty. I bought it as unlocked.
All right, so if it's not under warranty and you jailbreak it, you won't be voiding your warranty, so you're covered there. I think there's some pretty straightforward iPhone 4S jailbreak solutions that are out there. The problem where it's not safe is that if you don't get the right one, if you don't do it right, then you end up making your phone unusable.
It's possible to brick the phone.
Yes. It's possible that when you're trying to in the process of jailbreaking it, if you don't do it right, that the phone will just turn into a non-functioning
brick. Piece of electronic brick.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So, okay, thank you.
But it can be done.
It can be done, and there are websites dedicated that talk about how to do it, and they're free solutions. There are companies that will offer to
Although
do it for
I actually haven't kept up with it lately, so I don't know if – I'm assuming at this point they've broken iOS 7.
I've not kept up with it myself.
Are you running iOS 7 or are you still on iOS 6?
It's iOS 7, and I keep updating all the time.
Okay. Because that's one thing. Sometimes the jailbreakers, it takes them a while to jailbreak stuff, and I know with the 6 versions, they're usually a little bit behind.
There is an iOS 7 jailbreak
from invaders.
Because
then there was like Yellow Snow and Red Snow and a couple of others, but I wasn't sure about it. I haven't looked into it lately.
Yeah, there's a number of them out there. I got to where I was wanting to crack my Android phone. I rooted my Android phone and I put a mod on there. And the first time that I did it, it went horribly wrong.
Of course,
the phone stopped working. But I kept doing it. And there's a way to recover even from that. There are ways to recover from that. At least in the Android, but you have to reinstall the original ROM. You have to go and find the original ROM. You have to have the right tools on your desktop or laptop computer. They're going to allow you to interface with the phone so that you can apply the software. Some of the newer ones will actually run right on the phone now. But I haven't done it with an iPhone. I haven't found enough. There are some interesting things out there for jailbroken iPhones, but nothing so compelling that I've felt.
I've just never had the... I've never found anything that made me feel like I needed to do it.
And there the jailbreak operating system doesn't seem to keep up with the latest updates for the iPhone. So once you jailbreak it, you no longer receive Apple updates. So any new
Because if you install an update,
it'll break your phone.
You won't be jailbroken. You'll be back in jail.
Right. Oh, does that actually what happens if you have a jailbroken phone? Will it even receive an update? Can you apply an update to it?
I thought so. I thought it would keep getting them. It would tell you there's a new version.
But I think if you apply the update to a jailbroken phone, that it will break your jailbroken phone.
I think it'll put you back in jail.
Will it? Just locks you back up? Okay.
Do not pass go.
I mean, it's
but maybe not. I don't know. And maybe they were talking about locked, unlocked. But I thought people were talking about jailbroken. If you install an update, it removes all of your jailbreaks because it basically lays out a new OS on it.
Well,
so whatever your jailbreak was is gone because it's replaced it back with the original Apple, you know, software.
I thought if it looked at, if it didn't see the base OS that it was updating from and to, that it wouldn't even do it. But I don't know. So to answer your question, not necessarily safe if you don't know what you're doing. Oh, so
it sounded like you dropped off. It looks a lot easier though than it used to be. I mean, it's just you download something, you run it as admin, plug in something to your phone, power it, and you're good to go.
I mean, there's
not that it's not fraught, you know, with peril.
With peril.
But it's a lot. It used to, you'd have to, you know, get tool chains and boot this and do this and type this. And
if
cross
you
want to
hack,
guy that did a hardware hack where he like soldered some stuff and one of the first.
Yeah, crossing some jumpers to be able to, you know, load up like a new boot prom and stuff like that. There's it looks like it's download point connect and click now, so it's gotten easier.
There is a huge. And vibrant modding community for the Android operating system. So if you're really interested in breaking a phone, jailbreaking a phone, so to speak, and Android is a good option for
you. Or if you're after free apps, you don't have to jailbreak Android. You can just go get a lot of free apps. You know, they tend to be, it seems like, you know, a lot of them are ad-sponsored, and I'm sure they come with their own issues, and, you know, not having really ever carried an iPhone. But it seems like whatever you guys have, you guys might have paid a little bit of money for, I can go out and get a free version of completely legally, you know, through Play, through Google. You know, not like sideloading stuff or not, you know, loading it onto a rooted version where I don't have to pay for it. It's my Android's 2 cents.
I've also found that there's plenty of free apps for the iPhone as well. So I guess, I don't know. I'm not sold on the idea of jailbreaking the iOS. I mean, I've thought about it, and I feel like I will just kind of get stuck in this little jailbroken, my phone won't get updated. I won't get newer features. I like what Apple's doing at every iteration of the iOS that they pushes out new features and cool things that I like to have on my phone. There's not the only thing I've seen jailbreaking is that ability to add a Batman signal, the bat signal as your Wi-Fi or something on the bar across the top of the phone.
That actually would make it worthwhile.
But no, I haven't hacked. I modded my Android phone several times and learned many good lessons from that, which one of them was, don't really do this unless you want to dig in and be frustrated. All right, 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air with us tonight. We are taking your calls. I see Groovehouse is screening a call right now, and as soon as he gets in a point where he can hand that off to us, we'll have Flicked pot up his mic. Groovehouse doesn't look happy. Are you happy, Groovehouse?
Oh, yeah, everything's
good. Can we tell about the thing that you got going on?
I ain't got nothing going on. I don't know what you're talking about.
All right, yes.
You can tell me later.
Wink, wink. Nothing going on.
Not that I'm aware of. Did I miss something? What did I miss? I take my headphones off to the phone. I missed the whole show. I got to listen to the podcast. I'm just like, I don't get it.
We're making a movie. I'll tell you about it later.
Show up at your place later, Barrett.
I just knew that if I said that, it would get you riled. It was not based in it. We know about what we saw. What you did, and we know where you live.
Barrett's not sure. Gotcha. He actually wants me for the part, so he's going to give you a shot.
We're doing casting tonight.
Okay.
There's going to be a casting couch and
right. Okay.
The spacesuit is not one size fits all. So
bring a towel. It's a hitchhiker themed movie. It's not for any other reason.
Right.
But you're going to want to tell.
Okay.
You know, just wait till the Vogons bulldoze what he's got set for you. All right, Groovehouse.
Yes.
Who do we have up next?
All right, up next, we are going to speak with Amy.
Amy, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hi. Yeah, I was wondering if you guys can tell me where to go that has good information about how vulnerable Windows XP is and all of that, because we're having terrible trouble with it at work. And my charge nurse says, well, now we're going to go to charting on the computer. Well, our computer is almost, you know, nothing but a doorstop now, and she just wants to find other nurses to blame it on. But, I mean, honestly, the thing, I don't know whose fault it is, and I don't care. I'm just thinking, how do we prove to her that we need a new computer or something? a new OS or something. Otherwise, we're not going to be able to chart on there.
Well, I mean, you know, there are tons of websites that talk about vulnerabilities of XP and what the risks are. But the reality is that if your computers are not performing well, I mean, if they're running XP, they're probably older computers at the very least need to be considered.
No, it's a new Lenovo, but it's already got malware out the... I didn't make it clear. It's got tons of malware on there. And she said she had it cleaned off, but... You know, I never saw that it was completely cleaned off.
Well, that's one of the problems with malware is that it can be very difficult to remove. And if you've got a person who's using a computer who's managing to get it infected with malware, you can clean that malware and they will turn around and reinfect it in a heartbeat.
Mm-hmm.
Because whatever it is,
I think that's what's happening.
So the problem is that even if, you know, while XP is more vulnerable to that kind of thing than, say, Windows 7 or Windows 8, both Windows 7 and Windows 8 are also vulnerable to that kind of thing. So if that person who's using the computer, if that's their work computer and they're using it to browse the web and entertain themselves, they can get it infected with spyware no matter what operating system they're using.
Mm-hmm.
So it might be a situation where, you know, you need to, do you have an IT person at your company?
Not directly. We're in home health. So, yeah, I mean, off-site, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it becomes difficult to lock these down if you don't have an on-site person who can help your users manage the systems. But perhaps... looking at a situation where you're restricting or if you're in a position to restrict personal use of the computer.
I guess we're going to have to.
Because what will happen is that the person will be sitting at their desk, they'll be at work and they'll be bored, they got a little downtime and they'll run off and they'll say, oh, I'm going to download this coupon program or I'm going to download some music or a movie or something, and then down comes the malware and down comes the spyware and it nothing will catch it because they're actually installing it, you know, with unwittingly onto the computer and causing problems.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, I gotcha.
Yeah, it can be difficult. I mean, I don't know that, you know, upgrading the computers would solve your problem. I mean, it would be nice to have new computers if you can get your company to buy new PCs that are running better and more robust, but maybe that money should be spent on having somebody come through and assess your situation and see if they can help you out with it.
Okay, yeah. So just getting another OS isn't going to be...
It's not going to be a solution in and of itself. Yes, I mean if you're running a computer and you're being careful and you're trying to avoid the pitfalls and you're doing that somewhat successfully, even an XP computer will continue to work well. But if you've got somebody who's using a computer that's abusing it,
I wouldn't say she's abusing it. One of the night nurses, I mean, one of them does her homework on there, and yeah, someone says, "Oh, we got a free nursing textbook." And then she clicks on it, you know.
Well, if they're checking their personal email and they're, you know, doing personal things on the computer, whether it's school-related or whatever it is, then they need to be careful that they're not installing malware onto the computer because it doesn't just spring on there spontaneously. For the most part, spyware and malware and viruses are invited onto the computer by the person who's using the computer, either through the way that they're browsing the web or the way that they're installing software applications. And that same thing can happen regardless of the operating system. So if they have a brand new, shiny new Windows 7 or Windows 8 computer and they run out and they install a bunch of crap on it, it's going to have problems.
Gotcha. Okay. All right.
But, you know, certainly you're going to be somewhat less vulnerable, but I think there's two components here. One, you've got kind of a leaky, insecure operating system being used by a person who's not necessarily engaging in the best computer use practices. So, addressing one...
I check my email on there. I mean, I don't download, quote, free nursing textbooks, unquote, but
if they're going out and finding...
If just looking at my email is going to be a problem, then...
Well, looking, you know, what I see in the workplace is they maybe somebody, you know, sets up their work computer and they start checking their personal email. And then they get, because their personal email is riddled with spam and other stuff, they get some email that comes in with a nasty link in it, and they decide, I'm going to, you know, it looks like it's from their friend. It says, oh, click on this. It's very funny. And then they click on it. Next thing you know, stuff starts going wrong because it's malware. So,
yeah.
So if people do not have good personal email habits and they bring that onto the work computer, they're going to cause a problem. There's no such thing as a free textbook. If somebody's going out and browsing these sites looking for free textbooks, those sites have no interest in giving you a free textbook. What they want you to do is think that you're getting a free textbook, but what they're really doing is they're infecting your computer with malware so that they can compromise your identity and your computer and all of that nonsense. So,
and it reworked our, I don't know what you call it, but I was able, the first time I was able to fix it by going back to a previous date.
Right, using a restore date. Right.
Well, but then the malware came back. She, you know, whatever, whoever did it, I don't care. And then that was gone. That option was gone. It reprogrammed our computer.
Right, there's malware out there that will erase restore points or disable system restore, yeah.
God, it was so
at the very least, go to our website at geekradio.com. We've got a spyware link there that has some links to some free tools which you can use to scan the systems and try to get stuff. You know, there's a program called Malwarebytes that we talk about quite frequently, which is a good anti-spyware program. It's good for checking the system out and seeing if you can get rid of some of that stuff. If depending on how you're managing your data and what you're using the computers for, you can always reload the operating system and reload the original software and go back to square one.
Tell me that site just again of you guys.
Geekradio.com. That's our website.
Geek Radio.
Yeah.
Awesome.
All right.
Okay, thank you.
All right, good luck. Thanks for your call. Bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right. So, you know.
That's the roughest situation of all because it sounds like they're basically all on the – there's a group of people on one computer.
Yep.
It's the same login. There's not – so you don't even have the benefit of being separate users, although I think that that probably wouldn't help in this case.
No, I mean, it's the kind of thing that you run into. I mean, I've seen it like where we have temps that 'll come in, you know, and they have to use the front desk computer and they'll come in and they'll start, you know – installing all their chat. It's like when you have a relative come over and use your computer. Like they bring the nephews over and they want to, oh, can I get on the internet? And sure, go in there, get on the internet and say, well, this computer doesn't have all of my stuff on it. Let me go get my chat clients and all of this stuff. And they
Minecraft.
Start. I got to get my torrents. Buddy.
I got to get my torrents, yeah. I got to get all my music library downloaded from the music.
He's missing so many video codecs.
Exactly. All right, Groovehouse.
Yes.
Who do we have up next?
All right, up next on the show, we are going to speak with Vanessa.
Vanessa, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hi. Good evening, everybody.
Good evening.
I have a couple of questions, and the first one is, I have a MacBook Pro Air, and I'm not real familiar with Mac as I am with Windows, but the question is, how do I get these crazy ads to stop popping up? I have ads all on the sides, you know, in columns, like on each side, right and left, and they just keep popping up.
Well, they're not popping up, right? They're just on the sidebar of the web page, right?
Yes.
Which web page? Is it Facebook?
I very rarely get on Facebook, so it's on, let's see. Well, I don't really remember which.
All right, some websites present advertisements as part of the website. Mm-hmm. So I'm doubting that you have the kind of pop-ups and stuff that are caused by spyware or viruses. Chances are you're going to a website that has ads on it.
Okay, yeah, I think YouTube is one of them.
So, you know, if a website, like YouTube, I'm looking at YouTube, Well, I'm actually using it. Let me pause AdBlock. I use a program called AdBlock.
Yeah, what browser do you actually use? So when you go to, like, look at the websites, what browser do you pull up?
Safari.
Safari? I don't know if there's an AdBlock for Safari, but I'm looking real quick here.
There's Safari ad block.
Okay, so there's a, if you Google search ad block Safari, there's an extension you can add to Safari which will block ads.
Okay.
And it's helpful to get rid of those ads, but you know, when people call up and they say they have ads popping up, then I'm thinking you're talking about popping up in a separate window and starting to fill your screen. That's something you see in Windows. What you're seeing are websites that have advertising. Now, you may have gotten, I don't see it for the Apple. I don't know that it's happening with Apple. So I don't think you've got spyware. I think what you're seeing is just normal advertisements. So I'm looking at YouTube and they don't seem to have ads on the website.
Okay.
Let me pause ad block again here and try reloading YouTube and see if I see any ads. Nope.
I'm sorry, I called you when I'm in my car, so I'm not even looking at the computer screen. Otherwise, I could tell you which website.
All right. Well, the question really boils down to, are the ads part of the website? And if they are, there are tools you can use to help suppress those, and AdBlock is one of them. Consider also using, I find that using Chrome is very helpful. Chrome has a lot of add-ons that you can use to enhance the web browsing experience.
Okay.
Get in front of the computer. Call us back next week, maybe.
Okay.
All right. Thanks.
Can I ask one other question, please?
Sure.
All right. If I needed to get malware, which is the best one for Apple?
If you needed to get rid of malware, or if you wanted
to get the malware, you know, spyware system set up.
Well, if you know, like I said, the Apple tends to be pretty free of all that nonsense. I have not seen malware and spyware problems on the Macs. But if you're looking for an AV, Clam AV, C-L-A-M-A-V, like clam, like the oyster thing that lives in the water. Clam AV, which stands for antivirus, is a free Apple program and it's good. The limited amount of malware, spyware, and viruses that are out there for the Mac tend to be pretty easily cleaned up by most Mac anti-spyware or antivirus programs. What'd you find, Barrett?
Oh, not that much. There's a flashback malware removal tool, but they usually release it for very specific things. Like this one was out for Lion, so it's a little bit old.
Oh, okay.
Check out. I wouldn't worry about it too much, though.
I wouldn't worry about it overly much. Like I said, it sounds to me like you're encountering something that is presented by the website, because websites need to make money and they put advertisements on their site so that they can make money.
Okay, that's probably it. Like, I'm familiar with this. I have ESET on my Windows computer. Is that a good one?
Yeah, sure, it's fine.
Okay. All right.
All right. Thanks for your call.
Thank you. Bye. Have a good evening.
You know, I think there's maybe a misconception out there that the internet should somehow be advertisement free, and that's not true. A lot of websites, I mean, the websites exist, one, to provide information, but two, they put the information out there to draw viewers to the website, so the viewers will not only see the information they're putting out there, but also to see the advertisements and click on those and buy products so that they can make money from their advertisers. And you know, there's this misconception that there's should be, you know, that all ads are spyware or all ads are a result of malware, and that's simply not true. You can go to any popular website, even like Gmail, and I forget that Gmail has ads in it because I use AdBlock and it blocks them, so I don't even see them. So if you want to get rid of legitimate ads, if you don't want to see those, use an add-on to Chrome or Safari like AdBlock or something like that. All right, Groovehouse.
Yes.
Who's up next?
Up next, we're going to speak with George.
George, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Yes, kind of a non-technical question. I'm sort of behind and listening to some of your shows. And some weeks ago, you mentioned you have a home bread menu with a missing part.
Yeah.
And a buddy and I were talking about that. We're just kind of curious about something. Making your own bread at home, is there an advantage to that? Is it cheaper?
It smells great, and it's delicious.
Wow, we were thinking about trying something like that.
Try it. It's good.
I mean, the bread maker...
Make some bread.
This is technology. This counts. So bread makers are cool because what happens is you get a bread maker and you go and you buy a bread maker kit. I mean, basically it's a box. Like you go and buy muffins or biscuits or whatever. They have these bread mixes that are made for bread makers.
Isn't that cheating, though?
Like, shouldn't you make it from scratch?
Shut up.
Can't you just buy a chef? Okay. Or a baker?
Because I can just go to the store and buy some bread.
I
don't even have to buy the maker.
I will address this in just a second. But let me finish answering this guy's question. So basically, you take this box that's got this powdered mix in it, and you dump it into the bread machine. You add the prerequisite amount of water, and if there's like salt or whatever, depending if it might need that. But usually, it's just water and whatever that mix is. And then you turn the machine on, you push the button, and it goes through everything. It kneads the dough. It rises, and at the end of, 2 hours or 4 hours or however long, it beeps. And fresh hot bread is there, and while it's cooking, it smells like you're driving past a bread farm
by the sundae.
<Bread farm.
laughs>
A bakery, maybe?
Like a spaghetti. Little baby loaves playing in the fields.
Oh, so fresh! So, they're so soft and squishy.
So, is it cheap? Is it cheaper? I don't think it's going to be cheaper. It's probably going to be a little bit more. It's more like if you go into the bakery and buy the custom loaves.
It's all about the experience,
right? But wow, but this is so nice.
But I mean, if you make your own from scratch and you buy in bulk, it probably would be cheaper.
Yeah, it's a little bit harder because you're having to knead all this. The machine just kind of it has this little thing in it that kneads the dough and it lets it rise.
No, but I'm saying if you make the little packs that you're buying, if you actually buy the ingredients from scratch and
mix it together, you buy in bulk.
And you could do that.
You could buy all the ingredients and make your own bread mixes. But you go to the HEB, you go to the Kroger's, they have bread maker mixes in a section in the baking aisle.
I say get one and do it.
Wow.
It's not expensive.
Don't look back, George.
My tip for it is tip with your bread machine is also get an electric knife and use that to slice the bread.
Yes, that's a good point.
So when you try to do it with a regular knife, what happens is you grab the loaf of bread. The first slice is pretty good. The second slice, by the time you get to the end, you're holding a big wad of bread in your hand and trying to, like, shave off pieces.
With an electric knife,
it'll just slide through it like a hot knife through butter.
The way that we do it is that we put, we buy the bread mix. We put the bread mix in the bread machine. We make the bread. When it's done, we pull the bread out, put it on a cutting board, use an electric knife, cut it into slices, and you're done.
Yeah, I get them to cut it at the store. And then if they forget, then I just eat the whole loaf at once.
Get a bread maker. Try it. It's awesome.
I will tell you this style. We got that bread maker 22 years ago, and for 21 of those 22 years, it made a loaf of bread once a week, every week, for all that time. And on Sunday, every Sunday, we would make a loaf of bread. And you get these, and you can make fat grilled cheese sandwiches, Texas toast, all that good stuff. Anyway, appreciate your call. We got to let you go.
Okay.
Thank you.
Happy bread making.
Now, my wife makes pie crust from scratch. She makes baked goods from scratch. So it's not cheating to use a bread machine just to have a quick and easy fresh loaf of bread in the house once in a while, as long as she continues to make pies and.
If the only thing she did was do a TV dinner
in the oven and made a loaf of bread in the bread machine, then it'd be the honeymooners.
Right to the moon, Alice.
All right. Well, from malware to bread machines. Technology Bites brings you a wealth of information about technology. And we're happy to do it. Thanks for tuning in. We're going to get out of here. This has been Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
And he's
the Bread Man.
Groovehouse.
East.
Joe?
Jumpstart your weekend and get your groove on at Discovery Green during the Thursday Concert Series presented by UHD. Enjoy free concerts showcasing dynamic entertainers from Texas and the Gulf Coast. Thursday concerts at Discovery Green are co-sponsored by 90.1 KPFT FM. Spring headliners include Archie Bell, Barbara Lynn, Little Joey La Familia, The Cashmere Stage Band, Skyrocket, and many more dynamic bands. This Thursday, May 22nd, the show will feature Austin Music Award-winning Texas pop band Quiet Company with local opener Finnegan, a great Houston-based family band with stellar harmonies and an orchestral indie rock feel. Concerts begin at 6:30. Most street parking is free starting at 6 p.m. For more details on the Discovery Green Thursday Concert Series, visit discoverygreen.com. This is KPFT Houston.
Did you know you can find KPFT on the social networking sites Twitter and Facebook? You certainly can, and we'd love you to add us as a friend and get us connected with friends of yours. Join our fan page and check out a special video message from General Manager Dwayne Bradley, as well as keep up with KPFT programmers and staff. Visit facebook.com/KPFT Houston to join us. To follow us, visit twitter.com/KPFT. With both, you can link up with other KPFT listeners, get the latest news about the station, and find lots of extras. It's fun, so catch up with KPFT online. Again, on Twitter, visit twitter.com/KPFT. On Facebook, visit us at facebook.com/KPFT.